Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. It is the last day of April. So don't be dating your checks. Oh, we don't write those anymore. Don't be dating them April 31st. There is no such date. No, it's the last day of April, April 30th, 2025. I'm Doug Hagman, so happy to be with all of you. I was looking at the numbers today on our audio platforms. Man, what happened? Oh, my goodness. Just exploding in numbers on the audio platform. Not so much on Rumble. I don't quite get that, but okay. On X, not so much there either. What? You guys don't like to see my face? Come on, man. I'll tell you what. I got a great show lineup for you. On board right now is Jack Cashel. But before I get to Jack, one thing and then a true story. Here's the one thing. You know, with all the talk about stuff going on, I cannot recommend more highly, the satellite phone store, sat123.com, dark bags, okay, the escape zone. The links will be in the program description box, but here's the deal. It's nice to be able to grab, for example, grab a satellite phone. Oh, yeah. Hang on. Okay. So Eric put that up so you didn't have to see me reach. Also, bivy sticks that turn your cell phone into a text a text over satellite. It's really cool. It really is. Can I explain it? Hell no. Does it work? Yes. Do you need it? Depends. But I'll tell you what, the bags. I love the bags. When I got hit with that directed energy weapon, I'm kidding. But when I had my medical issue, I grabbed. Well, I had my wife grab. I didn't grab anything. I was grabbing my gut. She grabbed my my bag, and this goes into what I'm going to tell you. The story here, but she grabbed the anti-ballistic bag, and now. Hang on a second. Well, I'm going to hold this for a second until Jack can take the program for a minute. I broke my microphone. I didn't break it. I just did the screw that, you know, the things fell apart. Oh, okay. Keep that up there. But here's the deal. My wife grabbed the anti-ballistic or the ballistic backpack. Which really, I'll tell you, it's a great idea because you just don't know these days. And it also acts as a Faraday bag and all this. And she put, upon my request, she put a book in the bag. Actually, two books. I'm trying to find the screw and I hit the flashlight. Oh, geez. I'm trying to hit on the flashlight and it's not working too well. Hang on, folks. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm trying to find the screw. Anyway, when she put the two books in the bag and my personal items, did you see them? Now Jack can watch me because he's got a view into the studio, and he's laughing his ass off. And you know when I bend, it hurts. So anyway, all right, let me fix my mic. So the security, even when you're brought in on a stretcher, the security kind of goes through your stuff. And the woman security guard was looking at the backpack, and she said, "Do you have any weapons on you?" And I said, "No, but I'd like to right now." And she said, "Can I see she looked at my wife and she said, "Can I see the backpack?" So my wife handed her the backpack and she went through it. And she said, "You know, I couldn't tell what was inside." Now, I don't know if that's because of the ballistic plate, anti-ballistic plate or not. And she inquired as to where she could get one herself. Because my wife explained what it was. Folks, go to darkbags.com, sat123.com, for cell phones, for bivy sticks, and for your Faraday bags. Let me catch my breath here. Okay. The books. I asked my wife to go to my office and to put a couple of books in the bag as well as my personal stuff. Not a joke. She grabbed this one. I'm serious as a heart attack. She grabbed this one and another one. In case, well, for those on audio, this is Unmasking Obama by Jack Casho. Now, wouldn't you know it? Wouldn't you know it? Jack's article for a couple of days, I think. Let me look. It was about him. Hang on. And if you haven't seen the read this article, you've got to read it. It's actually page one in today's show notes, how the birth certificate con backfired on Obama and his lawyers. You've got to read that. You've got to read it. Susan Daniels, by the way, just a tremendous firecracker on all things Obama. But Jack really lays out a fantastic research report in this book. If you haven't gotten it, it's as relevant to today as it was then. Then, to rearrange my innards today, I was laughing because tonight we're going to be talking about, you ready? We're going to be talking about awful elfery tonight, among other things. I love this. I love this. On your screen, take a look. Judge Dugan, you know, Hannah Dugan from Milwaukee. I've been to Milwaukee in my search for Laverne and Shirley. Let me tell you something. It's so far from Laverne and Shirley, but Judge Dugan. How you doing, Eric? Thanks for covering for me. I was crawling under the desk for the mic screw. Judge Dugan is an elf, educated liberal female. But the article itself, at Jack's Substack, there's so much involved in this. I'm telling you, you got to look at this. You got to read this, but also read all of, in fact, subscribe to Jack's Substack. Get Unmasking Obama. Get Ron Brown's body. I'm talking about his books, not his actual body. That would be kind of awkward. Get Ashley. There it is right there. Go to casual.com. Go to Amazon, whatever you have to do. But I'm telling you, I wish I could just be half as good of a investigative journalist writer. No, not a journalist. I'm an investigator, but an investigator as Jack Casual is. And I mean that sincerely. He can write with the best of them, and also TWA Flight 800. But it blew my mind when I saw Unmasking Obama, because I hadn't read that in a couple of years, number of years. And I thought, wow, how great is that? So with me, without any further ado, Jack Casual, thank you folks for not laughing your butts off as I break things and try to put things back together. Jack, how are you, sir?
Great. And I was impressed that you could get down there and pick up that screw, you know, and find
Man,
it.
I'll tell you what, I've got a... All right, I'll tell you what. I got a girdle on. No, it's not a girdle. It's a binder.
Yeah, sure. I get you. Not a binder full of women, but a binder.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not one of those influencer binders. No, it kind of prevents you from folding in half and stuff. But ouch. But thank you. And hopefully I didn't traumatize you by my actions there.
Oh, not at all. I was impressed. I have a rule that when you drop something from like a desk or a table, that something goes to someplace mysterious. It's like where that other sock is.
I was just going to say. It's like the sock drawer.
It never falls where it's supposed to fall, right under the table. You know, you gotta.
Exactly.
Earlier, I was driving and my phone and my glasses fell out of my pocket. And once they fall out of your pocket in your car, they disappear for some inestimable amount of time. I mean, you got to, scrounge around, stop the car, slide your seat back, whatever. They're never where they should be, you know? So
anyhow, I'm telling you. It's at the wrong moment as well. Like, this could have happened 15 minutes before the show. Sure. It didn't happen. But and then I grab the flashlight. I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to use this flashlight. So I click the button. It's a siren. Sorry about that. So then I turn around thinking, all right, I can, you know. So I click this button, and so I had to use this to try to find the screw underneath the desk. All right. So that's that. Jack, there's so much to talk about. Where do you want to start, my friend?
Well, I don't know. We can talk with, if you like, about elfery. I mean, that's, I think, a subject much in the news now. The elf is, of course, educated liberal female. As I note, some people prefer the acronym AWFUL. Affluent white female liberal, but you don't have to be affluent and you don't have to be white to be a menace to society, you know, but you do have to be educated and you have to be liberal. So, for instance, in 2024, women with college degrees voted for Kamala Harris at a rate almost twice as high as women without college degrees. And, women with college degrees were the only cohort, you know, demographic cohort among white people that voted for Kamala. And they voted for her overwhelmingly, almost like, 3-2, 60-40. And unfortunately, these women who have an awful lot of time on their hands find their way into all these do-good organizations, or what were historically do-good organizations, radicalize them, and then become our Karens, hectoring us into, bad decisions and hectoring us out of free speech and common sense.
I am amazed. The more I watch this, really, this elfery, the more I am convinced that we are infected, mentally infected, and I think you mentioned this in the article, by this mental virus. A lot of people are infected by this mental virus that I think some refer to it as mass psychosis, but there's something else to me that is much deeper here. Ingraining, in my view, and you tell me if I'm off base here, but the years of I'll say this: the years of infiltration, the years of indoctrination, the years of being subverted from within have created the environment that created these elves, I guess, or elves. Right. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And what the education does to them, it doesn't make them wiser. It just makes them more susceptible to propaganda. I mean, Doug, women outnumber men in undergraduate schools close to 2-1. Which means there's less male influence on your thinking. And educated females tend to marry much later, if they marry at all. And they, which means that there's no male influence in their lives. It also means that they don't adopt the responsibilities of a wife and mother, paying taxes, sending your kids to school, et cetera. So they live in a kind of a theoretical bubble. They continue to consume media that just reinforces the propaganda they got in college. They're sensitive to a fault. They are, impervious to new information. And they develop these unfortunate personalities that we saw on display everywhere when COVID hit. They became our Karens. They became the custodians of the official narrative. They became the ones shaming the rest of us, or trying to, into yielding to their democracy, either freedom-free and, you know, lockdowns. You know, it's curious about the women that I profiled in my book, Ashley, The Untold Story of Women of January 6th. I didn't expect to see this. These women, by and large, did not go through, 4 years of liberal arts education. In fact, only one of the 10 did. But of the 10, the 9 that I could trace were day 1 COVID dissidents. They were protesting lockdowns from the beginning. Several of them were like thrown out of meetings, or, you know, had confrontations with authorities over their refusal to wear masks or the refusal to be locked down. I did not expect to find that, but it was a common denominator. And what was also true of these women, most of whom did not go to college or have college degrees anyhow, was that they knew their constitution, they knew their American history. They did not have formal educations, but they were wise in the way of the world, lots of common sense. And among them, they had a lot of children. You know, so, I mean, one woman, Rachel Powell, who's now out, of course, like they all are, it was the only one who committed something like a real crime.
4.5 years.
Four and a half years in prison. She has 8 children. And she's only 40 years old. Many of these children are still at home. They didn't care. There were no protesters outside her jail saying, this is unfair. She's not like a Kilmar. No one's saying spring her. Or like the subject of my ELF column today, Judge Hannah Dugan. You know, already you have elves outside protesting her arrest, right? It's such selective outrage, and it fills a void in their lives. You know, if they don't have children, why not adopt Kilmar as your surrogate child, or Diego, the guy, the wife beater, the woman beater, rather, that Dugan sacrificed her career to sneak out of the courtroom so ICE would not apprehend him. Meanwhile,
before you go on, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you think that Dugan, Judge Dugan, former, do you think that she thought that there were going to be any repercussions from her actions? Do you think that she thought she would get away with this? Knowing what you, based on everything you just said, did you think that maybe she would skate?
I don't think she was thinking. I think her response was Pavlovian, you know, pure Manchurian candidate. Her mentors had been grooming her for just this moment all of her life. And then she seizes the opportunity to be an elf hero, right? Unaware of the consequences. Actually, I hate to say this, but, you know, how many years go by? I mean, a month goes by and you see some woman sacrificing her career to help someone, some thug, escape from prison, right? Happens a lot. But when you're a judge and the two victims are sitting in a courtroom waiting some kind of adjudication, one of them, the guy had been beaten over the head by like over 50 times. The woman who had also been beaten was there. And the guy was clearly illegal, you know, it's like he had been deported once, snuck back in. There's no justification. He's not a Maryland dad. You know, maybe they'll find some child now to attach to him. I think it was pure instinct. She'd been home for this moment, and she responded. If she were thinking, like, my God, I'm going to risk my career by doing this, she wouldn't have done it. But thought is not part of their process now. And same thing with the people who show up, who torch. You know, we see these videos every day. Who key a Tesla, right?
Right.
Or who torch a Tesla dealership. They're not thinking. It's instinct. They've been so conditioned that they just respond when the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, it blows me away to think about this. But the other part of this, are you satisfied right now? Because you mentioned this too about the Teslas. Okay, we get that. That's the domestic terrorist, political terrorist statement. It's not I mean, it's more than just property damage. It's really an attack on our fundamentals. But do you think there's... I understand Bondi going after those people. I understand the FBI going after those people. But are we going after the right people? In other words, shouldn't we be going after... I mean, if Pam Bondi is the time to superintend cases like the Tesla stuff, shouldn't we be going after the things like Epstein, the things like the stuff that really matters?
Doug, I am people are getting cynical about this. I don't think they should. When you have Pam Bondi, I don't know about her, but I do know about Cash Patel and Dan Bongino.
Yeah.
You could not have a better pair of people at the head of the FBI. There's a strategic reason why they're moving the way they are. And I think we'll be satisfied before too long.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to hold you to that because I don't know personally Dan Bongino or Cash Patel. I suspect you know them better than I do. But which I don't know, but I do trust you. I'm willing to give them some time because I do know investigations take a long time to put together.
Right.
I get that. But they've had the benefit. I don't know. Maybe they're still trying to put the pieces together, but I'll go with you. But when do you think it would be the drop dead date in your mind? If things aren't people arrested, perp walked, is there a dead date when people are going to say, all right, this is all just smoke and mirrors?
Let me give you a case in point here. And I was approached a couple months ago by someone totally on the inside with incredible knowledge. I can't name names here, but I help people write books.
No, I know.
And this was the Beyond Jeffrey Epstein. And this may surprise your audience, but I looked at the evidence and I didn't think there was enough there for a story.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because we know, superficially, we know what he did. We know who some of the people were, right? But I wasn't satisfied that there was enough there for a narrative that would deliver the kind of payoff that a book has to deliver.
Okay.
And
wow.
Like last week, the woman who was the main witness commits suicide, right?
I don't know how much you know about that, but do you believe that was a suicide? Because I personally don't have any inside information about that, any knowledge. I wouldn't know. I can't comment.
I would say about her, and I could be wrong. Let me just say this. I think she was an unreliable witness.
Wow.
When I looked at her testimony, and clearly she was with Prince Andrew when she was 17 or whatever, I think her charges against Dershowitz were not true, you know?
Okay.
And once you begin to question a witness's reliability on anything, you know this better than I do, then you have to require, you have to question their reliability on everything. And here's what we know. I will say this, though. Let me back up. My source, the woman I was going to work with on this book, convinced that Epstein was killed, and I don't disbelieve her. And she knew how it was executed, right? Now, why I did not go into the book is because for legal reasons, we were not going to be able to name the person she suspected, right?
Okay.
So that put us in kind of a bind. Then where does the book go, right? And then I was also concerned about Virginia Giuffre's reliability, I know a lot about this case. I know who the two or three suspects are, and some of them would surprise you. Some of them are obvious, but two of them are not. And a lot of it had to do with high finance. It had a lot more to do sometimes with money than with sex. there's reason to believe that, you know, and he wasn't a classic pedophile either. I mean, a pedophile deals with pre-adolescent kids.
That's right.
He's dealing with 16 and 17 year olds, you know, typically. It was going to be hard to, it's a murkier circumstance than we would like to think. It was murkier than I thought. When I went into this project, I thought, oh man, this is going to be great. And the deeper I got, the less convinced I became that we could tell a story that was going to have any punch.
Well, there you have it, folks. Jack Cashel, Cashel.com, also all of his books on Amazon. But the fact that, and Substack, make sure you subscribe to Substack. But I'll tell you something, Jack. When you say it, it means more to me coming from you than anyone else, because I know you know. I don't know what you know, but I know who you, well, I know that you know more than I know about that subject. And
I'm relying on my the person I was to work with. And I will tell you that she's as inside as a person gets, you know.
Okay.
And it was in part because of her inside status that she had to pull back on naming names, right? So if you're writing a book and you can't name names, you know,
that's
and if you're wrong, God help you, because the, you know, the publisher is going to, you know, scrap all your books and, well, you know, lawyers are going to come down on your head, et cetera. So, I believe that he was murdered. Yeah, I'm not going to say he wasn't. She does, and I take her word for it.
About that, and I apologize for taking you down the roads, if you don't want to go down these roads, but about that, is there any possibility in your mind that he's alive? That was all kind of a, he was ferreted out of the prison, made to look dead, bodies, whatever. But could he be alive, do you think?
I don't think so. You know, because my contact has spoken at length with his brother, for instance, who also believes that he was murdered. I just don't see that as a possibility. Although I tell you what I did do in putting the proposal together was I looked at a list of suspects, and it was like Murder on the Orient Express. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen that, they're on the train and it gets caught in a snowdrift in Serbia or someplace. And this American businessman who was having illicit affairs with young women is murdered, right? And
hold on a second. Eric the Tech, are we having audio problems? Or is it me?
Your audio struggles a little bit.
Okay, I can't. I'm sorry. I cannot hear, Eric. I cannot hear anything except dots and dashes.
Can you hear me? I can hear you, by the way. So, Eric, I'm going to keep talking so the show can continue, because I think my voice is going out okay. Stop me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But let me go with Murder on the Orient Express, Doug. So the Poirot, who just happens to be on the train, Hercule Poirot, the famous fictional detective, has to decide which of the dozen passengers might have killed this guy. It turns out they all had a motive to kill him. And as in the movie and the book works out, they all had a stab at it, literally. Whereas in Epstein's case, there are so many likely suspects, it would be hard to choose among them. But if you were not allowed to name names at the end of the project, that would certainly make for a kind of a stilted narrative. You would have a hard time leading the audience to any place useful if at the end of the day you're like limiting it to three people and the two who are innocent are going to sue you. So that story may never be told.
I'll be popping back in here in a minute.
Okay.
All right. Eric, anyone? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, certainly.
Imagine that, talking about Jeffrey Epstein and everything, all my controls go.
That's the NSA and getting involved here directly. So now, as I was saying, Doug, it is like the murder or in the Orient Express. Everyone has a motive and deciding which.
Jack, if you want to, I'm sorry if you're talking and forgive me, but if you want to continue, kind of just continue with what you're saying. Allow me the ability to, I don't know, to reconfigure something here with Eric Tech behind the scenes.
I'll keep talking.
But
I
please continue and tell people whatever you want to tell them while I get back my hearing and my connection. Go ahead.
No, sir. I appreciate you doing that, Doug. And I, you know, by the way, I appreciate you doing what you're doing. You've been doing this much longer than virtually every podcaster is now on the air. And the advantage you have, and it's sort of the advantage I have, especially over younger podcasters, is that we've been around so that things that they read about, we remember. And it gives a certain ability to add context to a given story. Let me get back to Elfery for a second. And this is, it's interesting because in the late 90s, I was doing talk radio in Kansas City. In fact, we're doing the same station at which Rush Limbaugh used to work. And the show came on right before Rush Limbaugh's. So we had a great audience. But one day, the day I got into most trouble, we had on the air the county executive from the Kansas City's county, Jackson County. And she's a female. And we were talking about the gender gap in voting. And I made the assertion that the reason there may be a gender gap is because men typically pay more attention to politics than women did. It's as if I pulled the fire alarm. The station manager came running in. The Jackson County executive got hysterical. They all literally, in the moment, demanded that I apologize for saying what is obviously true. And I said to them, fortunately, the internet had become active by this time. I said to them, I could go online right now and show you study after study that will tell you exactly what I said. I am not prepared to apologize for telling the truth, even if it hurts people's feelings. I mean, the outrage, I mean, my board lit up, people were outraged, they're calling in, how dare you say that? Well, now it's a given. It's a given worldwide that men simply know more about politics than women because they follow politics more closely and make sense. What they've discovered also, and this totally to the discomfort of the people doing the research, is that the more highly advanced the culture, the greater the gap. So in other words, in cultures like Canada, United States, England, Australia, where women's liberation is more highly advanced and where women have more educational opportunities and more, you know, workplace equality, the gap is greater than it is in, you know, struggling countries like, say, Greece or Lebanon or Turkey or Syria. And then they wonder, why could that possibly be? And then they make these stupid arguments like women are risk averse or this or that. But what it comes down to are two things. One is that the more advanced the culture, the more opportunities women have to follow their natural interests. And those interests may lead them towards, I don't know, fashion. It may lead them towards, cooking, towards whatever. You know, we have shows that on TV that deal with all these things. I never watch them, but they're there. And they're there largely for female audiences. They have shows like The View, right? Which makes people no wiser, but it kills an hour of their time.
Must-see TV.
Must-see TV. Also, what it also misses, a secondary fact, is that the women in these cultures we were talking about earlier, Doug, are exposed to indoctrinated in, propagandized by higher education. And there's a third factor, is that women in less advanced cultures are living closer to the bone. They're living closer to the reality of keeping a family alive and healthy, which means they're in the marketplace literally every day. In some countries, they know the price of eggs, right?
Right.
They know the value of a safe street. They know the value of lower taxes. They know the value of security and the need to preserve continuity in their lives. And so they pay more attention. And the same is true in America, too. That's why the women of January 6th, as I talk about in my book, were so much more alert to COVID, to the Constitution, to the theft of the 2020 election, to the, you know, to the foibles of the Biden administration than were their more educated sisters.
And folks, I've got to say, the book Ashley is about Ashley Babbitt, but so much more. And if you haven't read it, do yourself a favor and read that book, purchase it. Don't borrow it from someone else or go to the library. Buy it, because that way you can make a difference in the popularity of the book. Also, you can also give the book away when you're done. It has a lot of the things that Jack was talking about, very important issues that I think we have to address. I was looking in the chat as well when you were talking. Someone said that I would agree, or I would argue that our viewers, this platform viewers, are the exception about the women, men that you were referencing. I think that about 50-50 with men and women. I think about 50-50 in this audience with men, with between men and women. I kind of agree with that. But you're looking at, to me, or you're looking at a statistic, I believe.
Yeah, and I would also argue, Doug, just to qualify this, I'll give you, for instance, because it was so beautiful, it happened right in our own backyard in Chautauqua County, New York, where the League of Women Voters, women associated with that, got together and had me disinvited from giving a talk at the public library, which the library had invited me to, right? So I ended up giving my talk at a bookstore right across the park from the library, which was kind enough to allow me to go ahead. And one of the women who was instrumental in getting me disinvited shows up for the talk. I got to give her credit for showing up in a hostile audience, you know. And I asked her why she had disinvited me, right? Why she went to the trouble of getting me disinvited. And I said, you haven't read my book, have you? No, this was my book, Untenable. And I said, it's a memoir. It's pretty, you know, benign politically. And she goes, well, it was the article you once wrote about educated liberal females. You know? And I said, you said they were a threat to democracy. I said, well, yeah, you made my case for me, right? You had me disinvited.
Yeah.
And she goes, but she says, you said educated females are a threat to democracy. I said, you're leaving out a word here.
Yep.
And I said, my wife is here. She's a PhD. She's a university professor. She's not a threat to democracy. You know, she could run rings around you in terms of political knowledge,
right.
Ring around most liberal men in terms of political knowledge. You're leaving out a key word here. Okay, liberal. Right, exactly. That's the variable. It's not women that's the variable. It's liberal that's the variable. And since women tend to be more liberal than men, they tend to be more ignorant about politics than men. And also, I should qualify for the women in your audience, in political surveys, conservatives always beat liberals, right?
Yes.
Always. In every survey I've ever seen. I remember once I got caught in one of these surveys. It was actually kind of fun. And this is some years ago. And they came to my house, and it was like like where they pick one out of 1,000 households.
Oh.
And they started by showing me 10 photos and asked me to identify them. And I got 9 of them right. And in retrospect, it's odd. The one I missed. I mean, I got Casper Weinberger right. I mean, who does that? I missed George Will. I mean, it wasn't an easy, photo recognition test.
Well, that surprises me, but okay.
I didn't read his column. And the more I know about George Will, the less inclined I'd be to read his columns. But
true.
But I live in a liberal Democratic neighborhood. And the woman said, "You did better than anyone in the neighborhood." I said, "Well, that's what happened." So, right. So my argument isn't against women per se. It's against educated liberal females, elves. So,
well, in the elf community, is it really education or indoctrination? Again, I go back to that because haven't we seen this, I guess, what would you call it? It's nothing but indoctrination. Where's the education in this?
It's an excellent question, because if I were being more accurate, it'd be the ILFs, the ILFs,
right.
The indoctrinated liberal females.
But ELF sounds better. There was also a terrorist organization, the Earth Liberation Front as well.
Right.
But so it kind of works a number of different ways. But yeah. Educated liberal female. So that modifier liberal is extremely important, folks. By the way.
Absolutely. It's without which not of that discussion. Because you and I mean, when I go to and I do this a lot of time, I'd really love to do this to speak in small town conservative groups, and women are in sharpest attack. They can run rings around the women I meet at the university functions, for instance, who are sometimes staggeringly ignorant and don't know it. And that's the real tragedy.
Well, I'll tell you what, you have outdone it with your latest columns at your Substack. Folks, again, I urge you, I beg you, if you really want an education, this is the man to follow, to watch, to read, get all of his books. Untenable, he mentioned Untenable. Wow, what a different kind of book, I'm telling you. We had, in fact, if you type in Jack's name on our website, or even Untenable on our website, you'll be able to find the interview we did with Jack. A very good book. I don't think Jack's written he has not written one bad book. So I'm telling you, it's so important. But the columns have been so right on the money lately. Not that they ever were off the money, but the right.
Yeah, I would say I ought to add this, Doug. I've really become a fan of Substack, and I would recommend people. You just go to Substack.com and put in my name, and you can find it. It doesn't cost to subscribe, although you can pay, and I appreciate the people who do, because for the people who do pay, and it's only $8 or $10 a month, whatever. But I'm serializing my work in progress. So I get they get a chapter each week. And that work is called The Empire of Lies, the Left's 30-Year War on Truth, 1994 to 2024. And the advantage you and I have, Doug, over you have other podcasters and me at other Substackers, is we remember 1994,
Yeah, that's true.
And you had to be there to sense the tectonic shift that occurred after that election. From my perspective, that's when the media went from faking objectivity to just becoming team Clinton or team Democrat.
Right.
They didn't bother faking it anymore. And because what happened, reflecting back, is that they went into they had controlled the House for 40 consecutive years, and it was their anchor, their security blanket for Democrats. I figure whatever else happened, they controlled the money, the purse strings. They got the House. Nothing too terrible could happen on their watch. And they went into that election with an 80 something seat majority, and lost the House, lost the Senate.
Exactly. Yeah.
For Bill Clinton's sake, fortunately, it made his presidency salvageable. And then they came in with Newt Gingrich, who is a real Speaker in the House, and a really, sort of bravado tradition. We haven't had one since like that.
Personality wise, and well able to get the things done. No, we haven't. And folks, Empire of Lies, I'm going to tell you something. Reading that, you know, Jack said something, you know, we, and I'm sure a lot of the audience demographics that I receive, you know, most of our audience, Jack, is they're the over 50 crowd, over 55. So we remember 94. Hell, we remember us in the 60s. But
53.
There you go. Yeah. But the... When you write this, and I wanted to ask you about this even before, but I'm glad you brought this up now. When you began writing Empire of Lies, the Left's 30-Year War on Truth, 1994 to 2024, if you don't mind, because to me, this is really the root of the problem. Why did you select... I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you, why did you select 1994 out of all the years you could have selected? Why?
Well, you know, because and this goes back to personal experience. You know, my wife's a university professor.
Yep.
And I remember, I live in Kansas City, and the world we lived in and dealt in, the people we dealt with were, you know, typically in theater, you know, show business, academia. It's sort of the quasi-liberal elite of Kansas City, right? Just because my wife was in theater and I knew a lot of actors, and I was on the board of a local theater, et cetera. And up until that time, you know, I lived with them in relative peace. You know, they invite me to their parties, and they, you know, et cetera. I mean, have exchange of, you know, friends. And I went to a Christmas party that year, at which I overheard three different groups of people comparing Newt Gingrich, three separate conversations. I was wandering around comparing Newt Gingrich to who? Adolf Hitler.
Really?
It was the beginning of the Hitler, the reductio ad Hitlerum of a phase of democratic thinking, right?
Newt Gingrich to Hitler?
Yes. Three times. And,
then this
began to notice. Wow. Now, then what followed, and then because I wrote two books that covered this territory, 1995, 1996. So after the Democrats got wiped out in the midterms, lost everything.
Right.
You know, Mario Cuomo lost, the Speaker of the House lost his seat. I mean, all kinds of terrible things happened to them. And bad things happened. The Clintons were held responsible because their first 2 years were pretty liberal. And so they had to really buckle down to do the one thing that they could do successfully, and that is raise money and run dirty elections. And so what we had, for the next 2 years were the dirtiest political campaign in recent American history.
And then that was the Clinton-Bush? Is that what you're referring to?
This would be the Clinton... Dole,
Clinton Dole,
96, with right. A little tinge of Ross Perot thrown in, but his main play was in 92. But to get that money, they had to go to China, and to get China money, they had to open the doors to American technology. Yeah. So in those 2 years, they basically sold out America to get themselves reelected. They violated every ethic in the book. We've never recovered from that damage. And it went uncovered. The media didn't cover it. And so several books were written afterwards by like Bob Woodward and Evan Thomas. And they were saying, you know, gosh, we missed the role of money in that election. And the New York Times reported on this in 97 when it didn't do any good, you know, when it was too late.
Right.
And no one much cared. The Thompson committees. Fred Thompson's committee in Senate did a very good job of digging into it. But again, it was in 97, and now they were over the hump and no one cared anymore. The media were, you know, moveon.org. You know, we're moving on. We weren't going to talk about the past. Let's not go back in the past. And then you had the Monica thing, and that absorbed all the atmosphere in the room. They got into that reluctantly. But even there, you could see what they did. They made a hero out of... they made villains out of people like Ken Starr. villains out of people like, even more like Lucien Goldberg or, I'm sorry, I'm drumming. Help me out here. Linda Tripp, right?
Linda Tripp, very much so. In fact,
did she become a figure of fun on Saturday Night Live? Her approval ratings were. This is Linda Tripp is a blew the whistle on this incredibly ugly scandal in the White House, and she's getting approval ratings in their low teens. You know?
Did you talk to Linda Tripp? Yeah, folks, this is really critically important. Have you talked to her?
I have not. She's dead now, you know, and I thought about writing a book about her once because I was intrigued by her story. You know, but interestingly, and this was shocking, I don't know if you saw this, there's, I believe it was a Netflix series called like American Crime Story. It was out about 2 or 3, 5 years ago.
Yep.
And they did one on this whole saga, and it was remarkably fair. And Linda Tripp is the central character in this, you know, it's a docudrama. It's like acted out with actors, but sticking very close to the truth. It was worth watching if you could find it. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually watched that. If you it prompt me to remember this is some of the key issues there, I'm not sure I could, but it's been a while. But I found that whole time period that you referenced beginning in 92, 94 in that time period extremely critical, especially when you bring up China and especially what we're seeing today. The fact that we have, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, you've got Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, Bill Clinton, who's really, I'm not sure he's that far behind Biden mentally. Maybe, I don't know. But why are they, again, here, I have to ask this question. They sold out America. Obama sold out America. Right. When are we going to get our justice for being sold out? Because this is, to me, treasonous. I think by definition, treasonous. I mean, selling out our secrets or selling out our technology, selling out for personal enrichment, just like Biden, just like Hunter and Joe. And
you know, here's the problem that the DOJ faces. And, you know, I got to give Comey, James Comey, a former FBI director, some, you know, kudos, not kudos, but recognition of what he's saying, the truth of what he's saying. When he said, and I guess that would have been 2016, he said no prosecutor would bring a case against Hillary in Washington and expect to win.
Right.
Well, the jury pool was 95% Democrat, right? Which is why no J6er was acquitted.
Exactly.
By the D.C. jury. They could never get a conviction against someone like a Hillary Clinton. She'd have to be caught like murdering a baby or something. I mean, and even then it would be probably a hung jury. You know, Trump would have been at fault for some reason or another.
Right.
And that's going to be true with every political prosecution they bring. Durham, for instance, had the open and shut cases against these guys like Danchenko and Sussman and stuff.
Right.
Couldn't convict any of them. And so what the media would say, oh, he couldn't get a conviction. Well, he can't get a conviction when you have a tainted jury pool, you know, when the jury is going to nullify whatever you attempt to bring before it. And it will.
Yeah. Speaking personally, okay, I've put together criminal cases and submitted them to our own district attorney here in Erie County. Not this district attorney. Let me just say that. And I've had the district attorney say, the case is fine. The case should be prosecutable and should be winnable. Can we win this? Probably not.
Yeah.
And here are the reasons why.
Right.
And this is why I mean, folks, this is reality. Okay. Now, I don't agree with that sentiment. Because some way, somehow, can't we find something, you know, anything? But you're right.
It's something that they've got to consider.
Yeah.
And so if there's a seeming delay on the part of the DOJ to bring big cases, you know they have to have so much evidence. It has to be so airtight. They have to anticipate the protest that'll follow, you know, the craziness that will ensue. And if that they go through all of that trouble and have it, you know, the jury come back in an hour and acquit them, you know, like the OJ jury did in Los Angeles.
Oh, right? Yeah.
I mean, there was a case that, you know, that's shouldn't have been a moment of hesitation, but that's the DC jury pool is no different from OJ's jury pool, you know? And if there's any kind of racial hint to it, you know, there's no chance, right?
Especially if there's a racial component to it. I wanted to ask you, so if that is the case, and again, forgive me, and if you want to move on, we can. If that is the case with our Department of Justice, can't and shouldn't our military in some way step in and handle through, oh, forgive me for saying this, but tribunals, because I know how that word resonates among people, but couldn't that be done? Or is that just?
I think that's a little bit of a bridge too far. And right now, let's face it, you know, Hegseth is struggling to get control of the military.
Ah, that's true.
There are enemies within, and they're making life difficult for him, you know?
Yeah that's true.
What was it? John Bolton said that, you know, Hegseth should worry about his own safety. What does that mean, right? That you got woke generals and whatnot planted there deep in that bureaucracy. You know, on a positive side, I would say 80-90% of the troops are totally behind Trump and Hegseth. But the upper ranks that were stuffed by Obama and Biden, you know, with careerists who were, some of whom are actually ideologues. I mean, many of them are just, you know, there, you know, whichever way the wind blows. But there's some dangerous people in the military as well, not to mention the intelligence agencies. They've got a fight on their hands. And that's why I would caution people not to get too impatient. You know, they've done 100 days, and I thought it was possible, right?
100 days is nothing. I mean, Jack, you know, our investigative team of credentialed, licensed investigators have been working on the certain aspects of the Butler assassination attempt. And you know, we've submitted stuff. We have found things that other people haven't. We've dispelled things that people assert are true. We've found things that are true that people say aren't. But the fact of the matter is, and I had a question to my client. I said, when will this be made public? And the answer was, prosecute first, public, you know, the publicity will follow.
Right.
Can we prosecute? And is there enough evidence to prosecute? And so I guess I know that's been July of last year.
Right.
So we're looking at almost 9 months, 10 months.
Oh my God, yeah.
So, okay. I get the fact that 100 days is nothing. And you're right, man. So much has been accomplished in the 100 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how Trump does it. I just, the pace of change and the pace of change makes even us uneasy. And the other side, it makes them friggin', like skittish, like cats in a room full of rocking chairs. You know, they're going jumping around from one thing to the next. They don't know where their next trouble spot will be. So when I drive by, you know, I live in the city, and a couple of weeks ago, I drove by the big, protest. hands. I mean, mostly it's old hippies, right?
Old hippies.
Like people like the Universal Unitarian Church or whatever. They're older. They're people older than we are. I mean, if we were there, we'd be like part of their youth movement. And so they're not dangerous. They're not going to burn anything down. But they don't know what they're protesting. So the signs are all over the place, right?
Yep.
And the general theme that they wanted was hands off. You know, hands off what? You know, hands off our government waste. You know, hands off our
food. Have you seen some of those people interviewed and attempting to articulate what they're doing there? They've got no idea. Like you said,
right. Why are you against Doge? Why are you against Elon Musk? What could it be taking away from you that you want? We're $36 trillion in debt. Let's start with that, you know? A little trimming from the fat would be one, at least a little place to start, you know?
I think you mentioned this in one of your columns, because I've been reading almost exclusively casual, folks. but it should be telling that people are angry, not at the crimes being committed, but the exposure of the crimes. The hell is going on with that?
That's exactly right. Because they know that with Trump, with Doge, which has gone so much more than I thought it'd be, some sort of gentlemen's committee where they looked at stuff and it took their time. But no, it's all, you know, balls to the wall. I mean, it's really pretty impressive. You're right. We're exposing their rackets. You know, it's their rackets that are being exposed.
That's right.
So much of the Democratic base has been sustained by racketeers, right? DEI rackets, USAID rackets, a Catholic Charities kind of, you know, immigrant hustling rackets. It's a whole series of NGOs are rackets. I mean, basically.
Yeah. You know, they are.
And they get a fair amount of private money, you know, like from the Soros types, but they also get a fair amount of public money. And we're, taking the life out of those rackets. So, you know, it's odd. Who is it? Eric Hoffer, the sort of blue-collar philosopher, had a statement that he goes, you know, a movement starts out as a cause, then it becomes a business, and eventually devolves into a racket. Well, these things start out as rackets.
They begin as that. That's right.
Yeah, you know, so you have like the civil rights movement, which began as this noble cause. Then it became a business, and then now it's just pure racketeering. I mean, it should get RICO after what's left of the. I mean, what it come down to is like that shyster clown who was defending, Carmelo Anthony in Texas for stabbing to death his this other fellow, the other kid, Austin. And he becomes a parody of Benjamin Crump, who is a parody of Al Sharpton, who is a parody of Jesse Jackson, who is a parody of Martin Luther King, right? So you're like Russian dummies. You're getting smaller and smaller in terms of their wisdom and their even their marketability, you know?
Man, I watched that case unfold, and Jack, I have no words. I mean, from the family of the victim, the father anyway, right. To the media's handling of this, to the fact that how in the hell can this this black assailant who killed a young white man, and of course, you know, it's all over the news that it was self-defense, and it was anything to me, anything but that. But how in the hell can, in today's society, can this man, this young man, raise what, like $1 million or something?
I don't know. I haven't seen what the last count is. For the same reason that Judge Hannah Dugan can have swarms of protesters outside her courtroom, or that people like be wearing, like one of my Facebook friends, not a friend, they went to high school with him, he's proudly wearing his. What's his name? What's the guy's name? What's the name? He has the guy in the Maryland.
Maryland dad. Come on.
What's his first name?
I think Eduardo or Eugenio or Eduardo?
No. Is it like an Anglo name? Like Handel or I forget his name. Kilmar. Send Kilmar. Oh. Right?
Oh, yeah.
He has a t-shirt. They're already into merchandise. Send Kilmar home. The Maryland man. I mean, a Maryland man is like the, you know, it goes back to the, very fine people. You know, it's one of those hoaxes that they just perpetuate.
Well, there's very fine people on both sides. He didn't say that. You know, And it goes on and on and on. And you're right, folks. My guest, I'm so privileged to have. Thank God he's here, because otherwise I'd be flailing at my desk right now. Jack Cashel, cashel.com. Make sure you get all of his books, every one of them. In fact, buy two of each, because you just have to. And subscribe to a Substack. Not the free kind. To support this man, because he deserves it. His research.
I'd say sample it in the free stage, you know.
There you go.
But then, Substack's a great, I love it. I mean, it's, you know, I save, I don't have to worry about editors. I don't have to worry about delays. I don't have to, you know, just bam, right there. And it distributes it. And it's just a remarkably well-oiled machine, Substack is.
I actually opened an account, and I'm going to be putting some stuff on there as well as our website, folks. But hey,
Doug, I really appreciate you having me on, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, look, if you can stay just a little bit longer, can you stay? Okay.
Can you save another 10 minutes if it's okay?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, because I do want to finish up with this, and I had some stuff written down here. Okay. When you were talking about Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah.
And folks, read the article. Let me just ask you this. Do we even know right now exactly who Obama is to your satisfaction?
No.
Okay.
I know more about Obama, I think, than anyone, right? I've written four books on.
Okay.
And yet when I talk to my two frequent collaborators on these subjects, Susan Daniels and Joel Gilbert, right? And we talk among ourselves often. We all have different theories as to why they were. Here's what we know. They went to great lengths to keep that birth certificate out of people's hands. I spent millions of dollars on it with, by the way, the same law firm, Perkins Coie.
Exactly.
That produced the Steele dossier.
Yep.
So if the firm that produced the Steele dossier produced the birth certificate, we have no more reason to trust the one than the other. They also commissioned CrowdStrike to review the Democratic servers, DNC servers, after the alleged hack in 2016. They were the ones. They kept the FBI out and concluded that it was the Russians that hacked it. I don't buy that either. But here's where we differ on just fundamentals. I believe that the reason they were hiding Obama's birth certificate, which they were, was not because of where he was born, but when he was born. And
that's important.
The thing is, I do, and this is, I do it for the team here. I don't really like to do it, but I read all the mainstream biographies. And sometimes there's valuable information in there, even if by its absence. Well, there were three Pulitzer Prize winners took a whack at the biography. As did a couple other people who were writing books about Obama's mother or Barack Obama Sr. So they're all affiliated with New York Times and Washington Post. Let's say five of them. They all agree on one fact, and that is in the summer of 1960, the rebellious 17-year-old, let's call her Ann Dunham, Obama's mother, was carted off from Seattle with her parents to Hawaii, right? We know that she was a wild child, that she had hit the road Kerouac style, that she had a fondness for men of color, exotic men of color. In 1960, having been alive in 1960, and having had a neighbor who was carted off, a neighbor woman, a young girl, I know why they carted them off, because they not only did they leave your neighborhood, they came to your neighborhood, you know, visiting an aunt, right? If you got pregnant, you left, right? And
right.
You put the baby up for adoption. They didn't have abortion then. And, thank God for Obama, they didn't, because he wouldn't be here if they did. And if you had a baby with a black father, right?
Oh, yes.
You better be going to Hawaii, because it's the one state in the union where a mixed race child would... could be accepted with some degree of, without a whole lot of drama about it.
Right.
So they pull up stakes from Seattle. And all the biographers concede this. The mom, Ann's mom, had a very stable job at a bank. Her husband was kind of a Willy Loman type, always looking for the next big score. And the story they say is, oh, he had an opportunity in the retail furniture business in Honolulu, right? No, I don't buy that for a second. I believe she had been impregnated by a black guy in the mainland. They went to Hawaii. They looked for a surrogate father who could represent her. Barack Obama Sr. needed an extension on his visa. I know he went to the INS and told them that he had a pregnant wife, et cetera. Although he's married back in Kenya. Everyone wins, right?
Right.
He funds the child. We know they never spent a night together. We know that when the baby would have been just weeks old, Anne took him back to Seattle for the next year where she attended the University of Washington. Story makes no sense. If he had been born, say, in February, it would have made a lot of sense. He'd be 6 months old. She drops out after the first semester. She wouldn't have gotten pregnant until November if had he been born in August. And a muumuu covers a lot of sins. There's no reason for her to drop out.
True.
So to me, the story that makes most sense is that they were covering for the fact that Obama Sr. was not his father. I don't think Obama knew this when he set out to run for president. I think he had been fed a fable by his family to give himself a sense of identity. I don't think they were building a CIA legend. I think they were just, giving the kid a father so he could say he was the son of an African prince or some BS, you know?
Okay.
I think when they did a dumpster dive on their own candidate, as Axelrod did whenever he had a candidate, he wanted to find out the weaknesses before he got into it, before he accepted the job. He probably went back to him and said, remember that speech you gave at the 2004 convention? You know, the multicultural ideal, Kenyan goat herder, farm girl from Kansas, all BS. Your dad is back in Seattle, some black drifter, you know. This guy is not your father. Your whole story is a charade. You wrote a book about it, right? Dreams for My Father.
Yep.
You know, you made a big speech at the 2004 convention. We've got to protect this at all costs, right?
We've got to protect it at all costs, right?
And that makes sense of every other detail that follows. They're building not a legend, they're building an identity for the kid. Now, we know that the grandparents were capable of much more mischief than that, but this is superficial mischief that makes a lot of sense out of everything. I could be wrong. I can't prove that. I agree. Because Susan Daniels believes that he was born in Vancouver. Joel Gilbert believes that Frank Marshall Davis was his father.
I love Joel. I love his work. Now, he was wrong on Michelle Obama the last time around, but you know what? He's got more things right than wrong. Joel's work on that. Speaking of Joel, let me ask you the final question, then I'll stop holding you hostage. He did a recent piece on Letitia James, property in New York. Is Letitia James, quite simple, is she going to see any inside the jail justice at all, or is she going to be allowed to skate?
She could. And I got to give Joel credit here. He and Sam Antar are working on this. They busted her. She was cheating on her mortgage applications for years, both in the stories in this apartment building, number of stories, number of apartments, by lying about it. They got a better deal all around, both in terms of mortgage, government-backed mortgages, and also in taxes, everything else.
That's right.
There's also questions about a home she claimed owned in Norfolk, Virginia, et cetera. It got picked up by the major media, which means there's a chance that they'll sacrifice her, you know? They'll let her go. She went before a New York jury who's seen enough fraud that they'd convict her, you know?
And there it is. I do hope that we can get at least that level accomplished and more. Jack, thank you. Look, I know you got a bolt. Thank you. God bless you, my friend. Thanks for bailing me out tonight.
It's my pleasure. I know you had a screw loose. metaphorically, but I didn't know you'd have one literally.
Literally, and yeah, that's why Eric, I'm not allowed to touch.
I love what you're doing, Doug. You were doing this before people, before it was cool, you know?
Before it was cool. And right. and now I've aged like bad leftovers. Thank you, Jack.
Hey, anytime, Doug. Good to see you. I'll see you in a couple months, literally. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm coming through in June. So
all right.
Okay.
Looking forward to it. Yes. Thank you.
And
my friend.
Remember, Substack.com. Just look for Jack Heschel. Okay.
We'll be promoting that throughout, every time I talk, I'm going to be promoting that. Thank you, Jack. Super. God bless you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Doug. Bye-bye.
Bye. Folks, that was Jack Heschel. I got to tell you, he's one of my favorite people on the planet. Okay, seriously, the guy is so focused and so even, and you know, he doesn't open his mouth unless he knows what the facts are. I'm telling you, there are many things that I could say, like, well, you know, this is what I think. And I'm telling you, and to see Jack work, oh. My goodness. I've had the ability to see Jack work in terms of, okay, let's take a look at this allegation. And I want to talk to everyone about this throughout the remainder of the program. Because there's something very bad that we are facing right now. I'm very worried. I'm very worried about James O'Keefe. I'm very worried about his health, his well-being. I don't know how many people saw James O'Keefe on social media. I've never seen this happen before with James, where he's come out and says, look, I'm not suicidal. In fact, it's on Gateway Pundit, I believe. No, it's on James's. It's on his social media. But Jim Hoft and Gateway Pundit wrote a column about this. He addressed things like Acorn, Planned Parenthood, Big Tech. He did today. He released a cryptic and chilling message that raised alarms across social media. In a video posted to X, O'Keefe appeared visibly shaken as he stated, I'm going dark. I'm not suicidal. Pray for me. This one scares me, guys. The message was accompanied by the ominous caption, T-7 days. T-7 days is a countdown expression, obviously. That means 7 days remain until something happens. In this case, I suspect what he's going to release. And to those people out there, and I want to address this. Well, why doesn't he just release the information now? And I know Eric the Tech can comment on this if he wants. And if not, that's fine. Because I've watched Eric as an investigator. You know, people have inherent abilities, inherent ways that they're able to... Inherent talents. How's that? And he's a very talented, Eric the Tech's a very talented investigator. He's very talented at a lot of things. But in this case, there will be people who will say, why doesn't he just release this now? Whatever he's got. Why 7 days? I don't know the answer to this specific case. I think I know what he's dealing with. I think I know why he's afraid. I think I know what he's going to be revealing if, in fact, he's able to do this. there are times when you have information that in an investigation, you know something is true. You absolutely, positively know it in your gut. You've got information. You've got evidence. Yeah, evidence. You've got evidence. You've got evidence. A piece here, a piece there. But that does not constitute proof. If you release what you have, that will alert the people who are the target of the investigation, and that will cause them to perhaps hide, destroy things, or, I don't know, or take measures to stop the investigation. I know this from experience. So you say, well, why not just lay it all out? Because you cannot do that. Because that will tip your hand. Then why speak at all? Why do you have to say anything at all? Because if you don't say something, and I want you to think about this. If you know something, let's talk about Butler for a second. If you know that part of the intelligence community, or let me be more specific, members of the law enforcement community tasked with the safety of our presidential candidates, a certain element, deliberately caused certain things to happen or not happen, same kind of thing. But you don't have the absolute proof where you can say, look, here's an admission of guilt by way of statement. Here's a video. Here's an audio confession. You might have a name. You might have the really everything. But if you don't have it in the form of proof, you ain't got it. Does that mean you shouldn't say anything? It means that if you are working to that end to get the proof, which is a consolidation of evidence, then you better say something. And it better be as public as possible. And that's what I think James O'Keefe is doing here. I don't have any inside information. I can tell you what I suspect. And I do suspect that it is related to the intelligence and defense department industries. He was on with Benny Johnson. Is this Acorn 2.0 or bigger? O'Keefe says it's much bigger. And the other thing he said, no, it's bigger because we're talking about corrupt government, billions of dollars, tens of billions. Stay tuned. What generates in government? Aside from the sexual and human trafficking things, what generates that kind of money? Wars. Intelligence, data, information. One of the bigger, probably the second biggest, maybe the first biggest money maker is dealing in information, data. Second or first only above perhaps child and human sex trafficking, although I believe that is ahead of the information business, the data business. But I would like everyone to pray for James O'Keefe, because although I don't have any inside information, It was about 3 weeks ago now, maybe a little. It was at the beginning of April. I heard some things, not about James or what he was working on, but I heard some rumblings about something that was going to be revealed. It didn't make much sense to me at the time, and I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to put anyone in danger. But putting two and two together, if that's what this is, this will compel. There'd be no way in hell, if this is what I'm thinking of, there'd be no way in hell that our Justice Department could look the other way, that the people in power could look the other way. No way in hell. The American people would not allow it. And you're dealing with people who kill by, I mean, they cut their teeth on killing. That's my two cents. Whether it's worth it or not, it's up to you. I'm not asking you to throw two cents at me. I'm just saying this is what I believe is taking place. Eric the Tech, let me ask you this. I know you probably don't want to say anything, but does that make sense to you? I mean, no, yeah.
Yes, it does. You
can okay.
have good evidence, but you have to have evidence to back up the evidence.
That's right. I mean, how many times have we gone through in the war room, in the office, with the full team, gone through and said, "This is, look, this is it. This is what happened." And then somebody rains on your parade and says, "Dip proof." Well, we got this. Well, that's a bit of evidence. Well, we got this. Well, that's just another little bit of evidence. Exposure of that could be problematic outside of the investigative circle and the people who are receiving that. I'm telling you, with James O'Keefe, watch that. Watch that very carefully. Keep him in your prayers. Okay. A couple of things. This is not new, but needs to be talked about very quickly here. I'm looking at the time. Hang on 1 second. Hold on. Also in the Gateway Pundit, I might as well mention this now as well. Earlier today, President Trump opens the door to suspending habeas corpus. Now, this is an aggressive move used by three previous presidents to conduct mass deportations of illegals. Now, Sam Andrews mentioned this on when was it, Monday? What are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts on suspending habeas corpus? This was done, obviously. If you read the article at the Gateway Pundit, it's right there. This was done by FDR. Who else did it? Oh, crap. FDR, Lincoln, right? He did it. We know he broke every part of the Constitution you could possibly break. And someone else. Eisenhower, maybe. Am I wrong? It doesn't matter. But we're talking about President Trump now. Here's why I do not have a problem with this right at the moment. Because how else are you going to fight a corrupt judiciary? What else are you going to do except act like a dictator? Although this is not acting like a dictator. It can be argued successfully, I believe, that President Trump has the authority, any president has the authority to suspend habeas corpus if there is an invasion or an enemy, identified as an enemy within our borders. Now, this, of course, despite the fact that liberals have engaged in this behavior before, liberal reporters, they're going nuts about this. This is the only way, I think, that we can see our way out of this. Look, if you think I'm wrong, then let me know in the comment sections on Rumble, if you think I'm wrong, or even in the chat right now. But the bottom line on this is, so you don't have to dig down into this, suspending habeas corpus entails temporarily suspending an individual's legal right to be brought before a court to challenge their detention. What these judges want, especially the one today, did you see that, folks? There was a judge today that says every deportee needs a hearing. Yeah, how are you going to do that with 20 million, 30 million, 40 million, 50 million, and I would even argue 60 million illegals in this country? How are you going to do that? You can't. The right of habeas corpus, if you want to get down to it, is in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, it allows an individual to seek release from unlawful imprisonment. Folks, that's what that is. The government is allowed to suspend habeas corpus in cases of rebellion or invasion, or if the public safety requires it. I would say, folks, our public safety requires it. I would say, folks, given what happened with Biden, with Mayorkas, and by the way, where is that communist cue ball? Alejandro Mayorkas, where is he? Anyone seen him? I want to know where the hell he is. Is he on a raft to Cuba? I want to know where in the hell this guy is. You know why? Because I think that man needs to be tried, needs to be arrested, tried, and put in prison for everything that he has done. But I digress. Are we facing a rebellion? You're damn right we are. How about an invasion? What else would you call this? How about public safety? Oh, I know people get so tired about, well, Lake and Riley, you know that name. Did you ever bury a child? I don't care for what reason. So don't talk to me unless you buried one or more children. You shut your friggin' mouth when you're talking about angel parents, when you're talking about the parents whose children were killed by illegals, by people that should have never been here in the first place. When you see, when I was in DC and I spoke to the parents and I watched fathers cry, sat right at the table with me, and they cried. Mothers crying. Saying, here's a picture of my son. Here's a picture of my daughter. Yeah, we just buried my son. We came here to in hopes we can make a difference. I see the hurt in their eyes. And only to be shit on by the politicians. I don't care if you're on the right or the left. Only to be crapped on by the media. Only to be ignored by the people who are so ideologically bent that they wouldn't know hurt, sorrow, or right from wrong if it hit them over the head. To see the parents, to see the siblings, to see the children of the people who have been murdered, maimed. Until you sit with the parents, until you sit with the siblings, until you sit with the children, or until you have that pain yourself. And I know so many, and the people in the chat, I know you've experienced pain like I've experienced, like many others. We don't have, look, we don't have a corner on pain. There's enough pain to go around, people out there. But this, what happened with Biden, with Mayorkas, and with others, I don't think it's forgivable. I don't think it's forgettable. I think this is selling out our country. And I think these people need to answer for this. And when I say answer for this, I'm not talking about strongly worded letters or no, I'm talking about hard time. You know, people say there are over 11 million let in. No, and hell no. You're looking at probably 40 million. And that's just me. Based on my reasoned research, that's me. But did you see how the media handled this? CNN blurred up. You know, let me tell you something. When you go up the driveway to the White House, depending on how you go in, this would be on the, I believe it would be on the north side.
North side?
Yeah, north side. There's a couple of, there's a checkpoint, and then you drive, then there's a checkpoint. And at that closest checkpoint to the White House, you go in, you go up the driveway, and to the right, there are sheds. Have you seen this, folks? I don't know. Have you seen any of this? There are sheds. Tents, sheds, whatever you want to call them, that probably 40, 50 feet up the driveway, they start and they go up to maybe 100 feet before the curve. Anyway, you've got MSNBC and Fox and each one of these little sheds or tents or whatever you want to call them. And across the drive, you've got the White House lawn on the north side. And on along the drive, there are signs that depict adjudicated murderers, rapists, kidnappers, gang members, drug dealers that have been arrested by this administration. And you might think, well, geez, you know, too few, too much BS to have signs. Think what you want. there's some progress. But here is my problem. It's not them putting him up. It's not, not at all. It's not their arrest. In fact, I love it. The media is trying to sell the public a bunch of lies. The media, and especially MSNBC, CNBC, and folks, people still listen to this drivel. So don't, and they still watch it. But they're losing their minds because the White House put up these posters of criminal illegal aliens who are arrested for various crimes. In fact, there's a 41-second clip. Just let's play this. This is from earlier in the week. This is video one in the show notes. This is MSNBC losing their minds. Watch this, 41 seconds.
White House has put up about 100 posters of what they say are unauthorized immigrants who have been arrested for violent crimes. You can see them there. They put them up on the driveway of the White House. If you look here, that's the West Wing just at the forefront, the executive mansion itself to the left. But what's particularly noteworthy about this location is it is right directly behind the positions where TV correspondents do their hits from the White House lawn. So therefore, no matter what network you're on, that includes MSNBC, if you're doing a hit from the White House right now, those pictures will be behind you. The White House doing a briefing in about a half hour about what they're doing here.
Screw you. We should put those signs in your friggin' tent. You have fentanyl coming over the border. You've got human sex slaves coming over the border. You've got the NGOs. You've got Catholic charities. You've got Jewish, the highest, Jewish. It seems like all of these religious NGOs are behind the trafficking. Biggest trafficker of all, in my view, the Catholic charities and the Jewish NGO. And don't think this doesn't relate to Pizzagate. I am still, by the way, folks, okay, I can't break this. I am still pissed off about Pizzagate. Sadly, improperly named, but let me tell you something. John Podesta, or the Podesta brothers, Hillary Clinton, and other people outside of the public sphere. Obama, part of it. Are responsible for the most heinous, in my view, in my opinion. So the scribes taking this down, you know where to deliver the subpoena, but I'm still allowed to have an opinion based on research. This is all part of Pizzagate, because Pizzagate is not about a pizza shop. That's like saying a serial killer or the Boston Strangler, supposedly. Now, back in the 60s, Al DeSalvo, remember him? It was about one murder. That's like saying, he just strangled one. No, it goes far and wide beyond that. I don't agree with, I love the guy. I don't agree with 100% what he says. Michael Yon. There's some things that I think him and I disagree on, but it's a gentleman disagreement. But he's right. He's correct when he says this is still going on. The trafficking is still going on, and it's being done by the NGOs that are not being shut down by our Department of Justice. And he's damn right on that. No matter how uncomfortable people feel, he is 100% right on that. You take a look at the areas of Panama where he goes, and certain places in Colombia, the Darien Gap. Okay. But the NGOs down in Panama, flags still fly, business is still being conducted, and people, children, women, the most vulnerable, are still being imported by these NGOs, which to date have been allowed to continue. Why? Because there's a demand. Adrenochrome. Can't talk about that. Oh, that's just bullshit. Oh, adrenochrome. You think? I used to think that until, see, you can create adrenochrome. Yeah, did you know that? I'm not talking about from a body. I'm talking about chemically. You can manufacture adrenochrome. Or the molecular equivalent of that. That's not what this is. Because I used to think, hey, look, why do you need, if you can get it over here, why would you resort to going over here? Where it's more costly, where it's more, it gives you more exposure. Why? Why would you? All right. Can you hear me? Can anyone hear me?
Yeah.
Can anyone see me?
Yes.
All right. So I don't know what happened. We don't have severe storms. We lost our entire studio power. Now we're running on backup power right now. Is that right? Are we running on backup power? All right. But are we running on backup? Okay. All right. So, okay. I find that very interesting that the topic of discussion. This just messed up all my controls. I can't hear myself. I can't hear anything from back there. But the topic of discussion, it's interesting how the program started. Do you remember earlier in the program? Do you remember that? How we were talking about Epstein, and all of a sudden, I couldn't hear anything? I was willing to say, well, that was my fault. And then we start talking about this. And what the hell? Would we get hit with an EMP or what? And we've got redundancy. See, we've got, I'm not going to explain except to say, if we lose our power because of what Eric built, we should not lose anything. You shouldn't even notice. But yet, here we are. If I was a kind of a man with a conspiratorial mind, I would think, wow, certain topics are just hot button topics tonight. Second time tonight. I don't know. Eric, do you think it's weird? Or
very weird. Can you hear me?
I can. Are we still doing the show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got about 9.5 minutes.
All right. There's also an overlap. I'll just say this too. There's also an overlap, I believe, with James O'Keefe, his topic, to what we're talking about. I got things clicking and beeping over here. I don't know. All right. So, but you've got all of these people still in power, no one behind bars. And I have to say that we must address the situation. God is not going to look too kindly on this country if we don't. And if it's not you and I, if it's not us, then who? Are we going to rely on others? Eric the Tech, any reason why the power backup would be making noises? Your thoughts? Like clicking?
That probably means going on and off.
All right. I didn't know. It's doing its job. Thank you very much. That's why Eric the Tech, he gets paid the big bucks. Okay. All right. Let me do this. Speaking about criminals, I wanted to show you this because it's hard to mention Pizzagate without talking about other crimes and people that you may not associate necessarily with Pizzagate. This is cut two. Adam Schiff is a criminal. Mortgage fraud, homosexual rape and harassment, murder by drug overdoses, lies and leaks. Whew, that's a pretty heavy duty allegation or allegations, isn't it? This was a post. And, well, I'll tell you what, it's 46 seconds long. You could just go ahead and watch this. Here it is. This is
Adam Schiff is a complete disgrace to our nation and to our Constitution. He represents the worst of permanent Washington, using his position of trust to lie to the American people. Schiff's disgraceful time in Congress has destroyed Americans' faith in our institutions. When Adam Schiff got caught lying, he did what all liars do and tried to cover the truth even more. If Adam Schiff has a shred of human decency left, he would resign from Congress in disgrace. His tombstone should read of his failed career in Congress.
Gentlewoman's time.
And should be one word, liar.
Now, you might think, well, that sounds good, right? It does sound good, doesn't it? But is there anything ever going to be done about it? I think there will be. And I hope I live to see it happen, or at least help create the environment for it to happen. All right. I wanted to show that when I was talking about Pizzagate, because I do believe that there's so many more people involved in the mechanism of Pizzagate. And folks, if you want, I will drag out all of the information that other publications refuse to even look at. And it's a very uncomfortable subject, but it's still going on. People are still making money from it. But the demonic power from the blood of the innocents, as I talk about in my second book, In the Dark of Night, as well as the first. But the upcoming book is going to be even more important. That'll be out soon, very soon, I promise you. Things like, you know, hospitals and operations and crap, they get, you know, this kind of take the wind out of you sometimes to finish the final draft, the things up. But I'm telling you right now, the demonic. And what about the Vatican? What the hell has gone on in the Vatican for so long? Especially as we saw with Francis. We need to have a discussion about this, don't we? My dogs are in the office, locked in the office. Now they're very anxious. We need to have a discussion about all of this, don't we? There's an overlap between Pizzagate, NGOs, Act Blue. You might of think, well, wait a second, when is he's just tossing words out and stuff up. The invasion, all of this. When Jack Cashel was on talking about Perkins Coie, the birth certificate issue, isn't it interesting? Perkins Coie was the point people for Obama about the certificate of live birth, but they're also the point people for the Steele dossier. It's the same people all the time, isn't it? Isn't it about time now we do something or make sure things are done? And I'm with Jack. I'm willing to allow a little bit more time. It's only been 100 days. I'm astounded at what President Trump has done, but we have to kill the root of the evil. Address and kill the root. We have to kill the roots of the weeds, of the evil weeds that are strangling our freedoms, that are strangling that are endangering our children and grandchildren. And quite frankly, we're not doing enough. No, we're not. I'm looking at the time here. I don't have time to play this. Video 5, NATO of NGOs, Natalie Winters on ACTBlue facilitating the invasion. Watch that. I pulled that from some time ago. I don't have enough time to play anything else. I want to thank you again. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. You know, it seems like we've been screwed, blue, tattooed, you know, hung, hit by everything, almost just about everything. But we're still hanging here. I've got a cup that I'm going to show maybe next week. Eric had to put masking tape or electrical tape over one of the words, but I look at it quite frequently. But I'll tell you what, we appreciate every one of you hanging with us. And we're going to make the difference together. That means the people who are listening to this, watching this, still after tech snafu, after me breaking the mic, after me trying to find a screw, after everything else, the second power outage, we're going to make the difference, you and I. Eric the tech, me, you. Everyone listening to this, everyone watching this, we're going to make a difference. I don't know where we're going to be in a year. I don't know where we're going to be in 6 months or 6 days. But I do know this. As long as we have the ability to change things that we can change, it's our duty to do so. Anything less would be an affront to our God, I believe. I'm not trying to preach. I'm not a preacher. I'm just a guy talking from the heart with remaining children and grandchildren who care